Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Jaeger CPA Review and More. This podcast is sponsored by Jaeger CPA Review, the course provider that deals only with the AICPA blueprints. Please go to the JaegerCPAReview.com website and look at our various products. And we believe in seeing is believing. And therefore, please look at our 3-day free trial. Pick a subject, and it'll give you 3 days free access, unlimited, to that product. And I believe that once you look at that product and see how it works, you will pick Jaeger CPA Review as your course provider. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 301-874-4900. If you press 5, you may even talk to Phil Jaeger. Take care, everyone, on your journey for the CPA exam. We wish you the best and good luck.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Jaeger CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Jaeger.
Hi, everyone. This is Phil Jaeger, and welcome to CPA Review and More. And once again, we're not talking about CPA Review today. We're talking about more. And we have a very interesting guest who we'll get to in a second. But as you know, and I've told you on many occasions, that my wife is a Parkinson's patient. And I try to raise money for the Parkinson's Foundation through the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's. And they develop drugs and all that. And if you don't know Michael J. Fox is, which is possible, all right, he did all those Back to the Future. It's amazing. Younger people don't even know who he is. That's what amazes me. But anyway, please go to Michael J. Fox Foundation on the internet and give whatever you can. Dollar, $2, $5. And you know what? You'll feel better after you do it. And don't forget that at the end, I'm just going to mention once again about CPA Review for about a second. The guest today, and by the way, we have scanned the globe here looking for exciting guests, okay? All right. And I would say this gentleman is the most exciting guest we've had. All right. His name is, now we're going to start this off bad because I'm going to mispronounce his first name. It's Shaheen, right?
Yeah.
Shaheen, and the last, it looks like Cheyenne. It looks like that. If you look at, it's Shaheen. Pronounce your name for everybody.
Shaheen Chan.
Well, that's pretty good. Okay. All right. Anyway, Shaheen is originally, he was born in Iran. Okay. And for those of you who remember, all right, there was a big problem between the United States, Iran. We put a dictator in there. Correct me if my history is wrong. And then there was a revolt. You left Iran. Your whole family left Iran. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
And what happened as far as, you know, what did your family do when they left what did they leave in Iran?
Well, we came to the United States right after the Iranian Revolution, and we were solid middle class in Iran coming to the United States, realizing that we were no longer middle class, we were poor. My dad had to take a bunch of odd jobs working at a pizza place. He later worked at a dry cleaner's, which he ended up owning years later. And we managed to buy a home in an area that was up and coming. And it was, you know, the one house that they could afford in that area. And they managed to buy it. And I noticed all this wealth coming up around me. And I wanted a path to it. And there was no path set for me other than become a doctor, which I didn't want to do. Going through all those years of schooling did not appeal to me. So I decided to leave home. I left home and went about to find my fame and fortune on my own. I had no money. I had nowhere to live. I had nothing, no support system. And I managed to get involved in the electronic music scene in those days. I managed to invent a alternative to one of the most popular party drugs of the time called ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time...
Which was illegal. It was illegal then, am I right?
Ecstasy was illegal. My alternative was legal.
Okay, legal. All right. Well,
yeah.
I'm just curious. You just left your house. You didn't have any money?
Nope.
All right. And where was this, in California?
Yeah, I was in Los Angeles. Yeah. Okay. We were living in a suburb called Pacific Palisades.
That's a very nice area. Yes.
Now it is. Back when we got our home in the 1980s, it was a hippie commune type of place. It was a very hippie place to live. People didn't really want it. It wasn't an affluent part of town. And then as gentrification happened, we're living there and the neighborhood became gentrified.
Okay. And so you went there and you started off with ecstasy. What did you do with the ecstasy? Were you in ecstasy? What did you do with it?
Well, I invented a pill. I distributed it through the drug dealers in those days at the various clubs. And we went from one guy to 1,000 guys to 10,000 guys who now were distributing a legal product outside of an illegal product.
Excuse me, it was a legal product?
A legal, 100% legal product.
How did you go to get it to be legal? First of all, who are these people who said they could convert it to a legal drug? Who are they?
I did. I came up with the product. And I basically decided that I was going to invent an alternative to ecstasy, which is what I did using natural herbs and supplements. So that's how it became to be. And it was legal at that time.
Now, do you have any prior training doing with the, you know, the chemicals, drugs? How did you know how to create this thing?
My only prior training was as a ninja Jedi Knight. I had no previous training whatsoever. I'm joking. I had no previous training whatsoever. I was a kid. I was in my teens. And I managed to get enough good people around me who knew how to do that. And I asked, I borrowed, I begged. And enough people were willing to help me, people who had that specialized knowledge that I needed to get to where I was going. And lo and behold, by the time I'm in my late teens, this is the early 90s, I have over 200 employees, offices in 32 countries, and the company had broken over $1 billion in revenue. This is pre-internet, pre-social media, pre-mobile phones. And it became a global movement, a global phenomenon. And I was on Newsweek and all the talk shows, and I had a collection of exotic cars, and I had homes on the beach in Malibu, and I was doing incredibly well.
Were you a publicly held company in any way? Where'd you get your investors from?
There were no investors. My investors were me, was having a product that I could produce for 25 cents, resell for $25, cash business. Now, fast forward, think about this. I was sleeping in an abandoned car, sleeping in abandoned buildings, had no money to my name, no idea what I was going to do 6 months, 8 months before. Now, I'm making hundreds of millions of dollars, literally over the course of a year. I've got a collection of exotic cars. I'm traveling around with celebrities and rock stars and living that life. And the news breaks that we made $1 billion. And so I walk into the office. Sam Donaldson, the great Nightline reporter, is outside waiting to interview me. And that's online if anybody wants to watch it. I was a long-haired youth, long-haired teenager. That's me on the cover of my book right there. And by the way, anyone that's interested to learn more about this story, my book, Billion, How I Became King of the Thrill Cult, is out now on Amazon, Audible, wherever books
are. All right. Please talk about that towards the end. You know, tell us, we want you to plug the book. Go ahead.
So what happened was that we broke the $1 billion mark. I step into the office. I learned two valuable lessons during that day. The first lesson is I didn't understand how much $1 billion was. I literally did not know how much $1 billion was, how many zeros it had, what it meant, how much money it was. I didn't understand. Remember, I had a grade school education. The second lesson I learned, and this is a good one for you because I know you're a CPA, is that I needed an accountant. I thought to myself, fuck, man, we've made $1 billion and I don't have a fucking accountant. And the important lesson for your viewers, the ones that are not accountants, to learn, and that I learned on that day, and something you might know something about, is that accountants are not the guys that separate the pills and the cash from the duffel bags that are stacked in your office and give you a count on the actual cash.
Of course.
I learned that very quickly.
All right. And everything was on the up and up with this, right? Everything was on the up and up.
Well,
it's either it was sort of, was it a gray area or was it on the up and up?
Well, it depends what you mean by up and up. In our...
Well, let me tell you. Ecstasy, we know, is illegal. It was, yes. I believe it's still, all right? And you came up with this pill, right?
Yes.
And the pill must have contained ecstasy, am I correct?
No, the pill contained herbs that mimic the effects.
Oh, okay. Right. So you found out what herbs make up the ecstasy, right?
Yeah.
So, and you made it into a pill.
No.
I'm jotting this down because I might start this business. Go ahead.
You gotta read my book, buddy. So
I will.
What I did. So there was a party drug going on at that time called ecstasy. I'm going to take a wild guess since you're 70, you said 72?
76.
76, okay. Since you're 76, maybe you haven't had the experience of enjoying ecstasy.
No, I haven't tried.
Copy that.
Not recently.
Okay.
At least.
Gotcha. So ecstasy is a designer drug, an illegal designer drug that is very powerful and very empathetic. It's a decent drug. Now, I don't espouse anybody take any drugs, do anything, take anything without talking to your doctor. So talk to your doctor before you take anything. Now, what I invented was a legal alternative to ecstasy. It was a combination of natural organic herbs and organic materials that we put in there, herbs, minerals, supplements, to mimic the effect. And this was not illegal. So if what you mean by up and up is, was it illegal? The
answer
to that is no, it was legal. Yeah.
Okay. Where did you start selling this? First of all, you developed these, the herbs that actually make up the ecstasy, correct?
Yeah.
All right. And you developed what you did. And who's the first company who decided, you didn't sell it yourself door to door. You were knocking on doors. How did you sell this product initially?
Well, buddy, you know, I think I did sell it door to door. And I think initially it went through the club scene, the rave scene, the party scene. And what I did was I enlisted the drug dealers. That was what I was telling you in the beginning. So I was at the right place at the right time. During this time in the 1990s, the supply of drugs had dried up. The supply of ecstasy, which was produced in two countries, primarily England and Holland, had been stymied. It was not coming into the United States. So you had this distribution circuit of dealers, low-level dealers in the clubs, who had nothing to sell. There's an opportunity there. So I went to them and I gave them the prospect of selling a legal drug. And to that, they joyously said yes. From there, we went on to sell in brick and mortar, 7-Eleven, GNC. We were selling in Walmart, Warehouse Records. Larry Flint was selling it into all the sex stores. So we were a pretty racy product, but we were also selling into traditional avenues of brick and mortar. And again, by the time I was in my late teens, we were in close to 32,000 doors all over the world. I had offices in 32 countries. I had over 200 employees. And there were, I write about it in my book, several investment banks interested in taking us public through an IPO.
Really? That's interesting.
Yes.
I'm just curious. What was your father doing in Iran? What was his occupation?
All right, are you ready? Is your seatbelt on, Phil Yeager?
No, it isn't, but go ahead anyway.
My dad, Phil Yeager, in Iran, worked for a small accountancy firm called Coopers and Librin. Have you heard of them?
Librinth, yeah.
Librinth, yes.
Oh, yeah, they were around. Big Eight.
There you go.
They call them all the Big Eight, you know.
Yep, and my mom
worked
they got involved in
litigation, all right? And then it left, we called them the Final Four.
Oh, is that right? There you go. And my mom worked for Lockheed as a secretary.
Really? Was your father a chartered accountant or just a plain... They had chartered, like CPAs were chartered accountants, all right? He just worked there.
Okay. So here's the thing with my dad.
I'm trying to think where you're getting all this business sense from, you know?
I got no business sense from my dad. Here's the thing with my dad. Love the guy to death. I have never seen him solve a math problem. He had zero idea of any of my math homework coming here to the United States. He barely spoke English. He learned English. you know, honest, hardworking Jewish Iranian American, you know, a Jewish Iranian American guy. But
I'm sorry,
I never understood.
He was Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
we're Iranian Jews. The Iranians have epic holidays, and because you've got dual culture. So you've got the Iranian culture and then you have the Jewish culture. And culturally, you know, Iranian Jews are the oldest Jews. Most people don't know this. It predates, the reason why they say Judaism predates all these other Judeo-Christian religions, maybe not some of the paganistic or animistic religions, but certainly all the other Judeo-Christian religions, is because of the Iranian Jews. They found evidence of the oldest Jews in Iran. So, you know, my dad was always a hardworking guy, but never the best at math, or maybe not the best accountant. I don't know. I mean, I know he had these ledgers that he wrote by hand, and he had the calculator with the rolls of
things. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, he had all that. He's got all that stuff, but it's old school. You're talking about a guy that, you know, was born in the 1940s and grew up in Iran.
So he's got to be about my age, I would think. What does he do? He's retired now?
Exactly right. I hope it's okay. I call you dad.
Call me dad. Call me Jay. Call me Ray. Remember that one? You call me Ray. Call me Jay. Go ahead. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Call me dad. All right. See, in New York, you grew up in the New York area. All my neighbors were Italian, Catholics, you know, and yet they would come over and say, you know, Phil, you're a mensch. Okay. And which is a nice, decent guy. And I can just tell you one thing. I was on a radio show in Manhattan called Cousin Brucey. He's still around after all these years. Yeah. Anyway, I co-hosted with him. I won a contest. So I co-hosted with him. And then I said, you know, Bruce, you're a mensch. And then the people called in. They want to know, what's a mensch? Now, people in New York who are not Jewish know what a mensches are. But that has nothing to do with what you do. All right, so let's go on. I want to get to the, let's talk. The next thing, you invented cigarettes.
Herbal cigarettes. So look, Phil, my entire life has been based around looking at finding problems in various marketplaces, finding a niche, and then dominating that niche by addressing that big problem. So the first problem I solved was that people like to go out, people like to party. There was no supply of illicit drugs, so I created a natural one that was legal. The second was that I created the first herbal cigarette. It was, and is to this day, the standard for Hollywood studios, because, you know, on the sets, people can't smoke tobacco every scene after scene. It makes their throats harsh. So I came up with a cigarette that did that. After that, I invented all the technology for portable digital vaporization. I patented it. I wrote the book on it. And it led to what people use today as vapes and vaporization technology.
Right.
And subsequent to that, I do what I do now, which is help Jeff Bezos inspire people to make money by teaching people how to use the Amazon platform. This beautiful business that Jeff Bezos has built, Amazon, will create more millionaires and billionaires in our time than any other disruptive e-commerce environment. And so I've been dedicated for the past 10 plus years to teaching people how to start these Amazon businesses and create recurring streams of cash flow, recurring streams of revenue, so they can give their middle finger to their boss and go out there and work for themselves.
Now, we skipped over the cigarettes. That's fine. But I just want to know, can you tell us, I don't know what you can share with us, but the last company you brought to market on Amazon, correct? All right.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what that company was?
That I brought on Amazon? So yeah. We have a company now called Accelerated Intelligence. And Accelerated Intelligence is one of the big Amazon sellers. So what most people don't know is when you buy something on Amazon, you may be buying from Amazon, but more likely you're buying from one of 5 million third-party sellers. People like me and you, Phil, accountants, lawyers, doctors, real estate agents, oil engineers, stay-at-home moms, soccer dads, whatever it is. Because anybody can start an Amazon business. And my company, which is where I make most of my money these days, is finding innovative products and strategies and selling those products on the Amazon platform. What most people don't know is that anybody in a very short amount of time with very little money can start one of these Amazon businesses and have it really be just another piece of real estate that creates predictable, recurring cash flow. And it's day one. We are at the very beginning of this massive trend. And I invite everybody, your viewers, your listeners, even yourself, my friend, to start getting involved in starting an Amazon business.
You're a consultant? You get a fee for setting them up? How do you make your money, if I may ask you?
I'm expensive. I do consulting for Fortune 50s, Fortune 500s, and venture-backed startups. I charge $55,000 and $1,250 an hour. There's people under me. I've got associates that charge at less. But what happened was I was doing this for a number of years for Fortune 50s, Fortune 500s, teaching people, how do you find a product? How do you get that product on the first page of Amazon? How do you get reviews? How do you get ranked? How do you get people to continually buy your product and subscribe to it and to create these streams of revenue? And people were like, Shaheen, we would love to do this, but we can't afford to pay you. You're ridiculously expensive. And I said, yeah, I know. It's insane that people pay me this. And there's a line around the block waiting to get in. So what I did, Phil, is I created a online course that anybody could take. It is absolutely free. It's normally $200 for anybody who is listening using the code CPA. We're going to give it free, Phil Yeager. It's a one-hour course, tells you everything you want to know, A to Z. How do you start an Amazon company? Where to incorporate? All that good stuff. And maybe they can come to you for their tax planning. And if anybody's interested, I'm going to give out my email. It's darkzess@gmail.com. darkzess@gmail.com. Use the code CPA in the subject heading, and I will give you my one-hour course on how to become a master at selling on Amazon for free. And that's what I do now. I inspire people to sell and create these Amazon businesses.
People will say, wait a minute, no one gives away anything for nothing. All right. Is that true? All right. This is all free. How many of these do you do that you give away for free?
Thousands, tens of thousands.
Thousands, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, can you give me an example?
There's tens of thousands of others that have paid thousands of dollars.
Well, free sounds a lot better, doesn't it? Another big word that goes out there to a lot of people is discount. They like the word discount, right? Discount,
yeah. Free. I mean, look, I learned a while ago that if you want to get people engaged, you got to remove the barriers to them getting successful. Most people, Phil, just get in their own way. I look at so many people that are just in their own way about how they're not being frugal in life, how they get a little bit of money and they get a fancy apartment, food and cars, and like they're spending all their money. And then people look at me and they're like, I go to happy hour at the local restaurant here. And they go, Shaheen, you're a millionaire. You drove up in a brand new Porsche. That car's worth $300,000 and you're coming to the happy hour? And I say, yeah, how do you think I afford the Porsche? That's how it works. And then I see other people where, you know, a lot of actors in LA, we've got a friend who's an actress and this girl makes a little bit of money acting, you know, a couple hundred grand, you know, she's getting to be fairly well known. And she goes off and she spends 50 grand buying her 9-year-old clothing. And you think designer clothing and spending money and getting a fancy apartment and all this stuff. And I'm like, man, you know, you're just getting in your own way. You're getting in your own way. You need to invest. You need to build foundational wealth. And then from the money that you get from that foundational wealth, then you can buy the luxury. And as you know, that luxury becomes a write-off if you do it right. But people get in their own way. So as coaches, as people who inspire people, we have to try to take out those barriers to entry so it's easy as possible for them to start this stuff.
Now, a mom and pop, a smaller business, mom and pop business, okay?
Yeah.
They want to get into this Amazon store, okay? Now, you are you going to charge them a consulting fee?
No, they can just email me, darkzess@gmail.com. Okay. I'll give them the course for free. It's everything you need. Where to incorporate, how do you start your business? How do you get reviews? How do you find a product? Most people's like, I can't find a product. How do you find a product? We teach you how to do that. We do all of that for free. Now, I have a platinum mastermind. I've got one-on-one coaching. I've got all this other stuff that we offer, which is an extra fee, which is optional. But if you reach out to us, all you need is in that 1 hour course.
And you enclose a bottle of the pills?
I'll include a bottle of the pills just for you, buddy.
No, I didn't say for me. I mean, you know, I'm just happy. I'm happy on life anyway, you know. So I come to you. I come to you, your people, and say, I have an idea for an Amazon store. Okay? Tell me where I'm going wrong. All right, now, I want to put my entire course on Amazon and sell all the components of it. Okay. All right. Now let's talk about what everyone's going to take of when I sell the different components. Okay. All right. First of all, that can be done, can it?
Right. So I think maybe a better example is you say, hey, I'm an accountant right now, and I'd like to have another stream. I've got some real estate. I'm sure you got some real estate, Phil, a good Jewish accountant. You're going to have some real estate, right? So you've got some cash flow that's coming in from that. You probably have some money in the market. So that's bringing in some compounded interest, especially if you're in dividends and those types of things. So you've got two good foundations, two good pillars. You probably have a little bit of a savings, a 401k, a defined benefits plan, pension plan, whatever. Fantastic. Love to hear that. Okay, real estate's at an all-time high. Why not build another form of real estate? And so what you do is you come to me and I show you how to find a product. Now, what we do is we look at the market. We see what the market needs. Now, you're like, Shaheen, I'm busy. I'm a successful accountant. I don't have time. No problem. We utilize the time of virtual assistants in South and Central America, in India. These people are MBA quality employees that would be delighted for a fraction. They would be delighted to work for a fraction of what you would pay somebody here in the United States. And they will work so hard for you, especially if you treat
them
well.
I think they call that outsourcing, correct?
Outsourcing.
That's outsourcing. Okay.
So we build out a team for you. We help you build out a team of winners that will run this business for you. And Amazon will handle the rest. They will pick, pack, and ship your product. They will advertise it. They will get you the eyeballs. They will do all the stuff that you need to do. And then you just sit back and you collect cash flow. And it becomes another source of recurring revenue.
What percentage does Amazon take of the sale?
So it depends. It's different on different products. Roughly, we can look at a 25% gross margin.
All right. And now when I came up with my idea,
You're talking about a digital product, and Amazon may not be the best place.
Yes and no. No, we have books. You consider books digital. Yeah. Okay.
The quickest way to go broke is to sell a book, buddy, because you're selling something for $20, $30. How much do people value a book, and what's the cost to print? And how do you get it out there?
Cancel those book orders. <Go
ahead. laughs> Yeah. Well, a book is good as an authority piece. Book is good as a calling card. Book is good as a way to disseminate information. Look, you're talking to a guy who's spent the last several years writing
the book. What is the cost of that book, by the way? You want to share that?
My book? I don't know how much the cost. It's probably like $20. It's called Billion, How I Became King of the Thrill Pill Cult. Again,
how many books have you actually, is Amazon sold? Do you know?
Thousands.
Thousands?
But, you know, that's a really hard way to get rich. The easier way would be, Phil, you and I are going to start looking at the market for candlesticks. I see you got some crystal candlesticks behind you. And we're going to see.
Yeah, they're crystal from our crystal mines we have in Africa.
There you go.
Oh, I don't know what they are.
So we're going to start looking at those on Amazon. Well, we noticed that those aren't selling very well. So we're not going to pursue that. But the candles that go inside them, man, there's really a market for that. We can spy the sales of our competitors and notice that competitors are doing $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a month selling those candles. In fact, Hanukkah candles, believe it or not, were going for $9 a box on Amazon during this time. So I say, Phil, you know what? Me and you, we're going to sell Hanukkah candles. And now we contact a manufacturer in China on Alibaba. We get them to produce these Hanukkah candles for us. About 25 cents a unit. We're going to purchase them. We're going to sell them on Amazon for $7.99. And we're going to give them a few extra. We're going to give them enough Hanukkah candles for next year's Hanukkah candles. And now we've got a value. We're going to brand them great. We're going to get your rabbi there to endorse them. So they're going to be authority behind them. So they're going to be a special candle. And they're going to come in better colors. And they're going to be kosher candles because he's going to bless them in all kosherness. And okay. So now we've got a product that has a competitive advantage and we're selling it for less. And now we take over market share. We start moving in. We're making 20,000 a month, 50,000 a month, 100,000 a month. And sure, Amazon takes their portion, but we're still left with 25% gross margin. And that's phenomenal on a product that you make in for cents and selling for dollars.
You have any people who've done that with the Hanukkah candles?
Probably a lot. It was an example off top of my head.
I'm just curious. That's all there was.
I have no idea, but I do know that there was a shortage this Hanukkah.
Thank you so much for listening to Jaeger CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Jaeger CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.